Welcome to Comadres y Comics.
Comadres y Comics is a podcast hosted by three Latina women. We focus on the Latinx prisons in the comic book industry.
With a strong special focus on strong female characters and creators. Hi guys, welcome back to Comadres y Comics episode number 28. How are you guys doing?
For reals this time.
I know. Alright, welcome back girls.
Happy to be back, even though I'm sick.
I know, Jen sounds sexy because she's sick. And Kristen still sounds a remnants of sexy because she's also getting over her sickness.
Yeah, well, it's weird. I wasn't actually sick. I just randomly lost my voice, and it was just, like I didn't have any sore throat or
whatever
anything.
Whatever could have done that, I wonder.
I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know.
Wow. Wow. Well, today is February the 15th, and yesterday was Valentine's Day. What did you guys do? Do share.
Well, this is Kristen. I had to work. It was Wednesday, so it's New Comic Book Day. So I generally work at the shop, Heidi Ho Comics from 3 to 8 on Wednesdays, and it's our weekly discussion group. And so I knew I had to work, so I asked Eddie ahead of time to just get all his work done or everything he needed to be out of the way so that we could go have tea at Chato Tea Room for Valentine's
Whoa.
Day.
I love that.
Yeah. So it was so good. I love their tea. I love their little finger sandwiches. But I couldn't... Okay, so we were sitting next to this family. It was, I believe, a mother, a small girl, and then the mother of the daughter. There was three women, three generations. Okay, so a grandmother, a mother, and a daughter. The daughter was probably about six or seven. There is a sandwich on the menu called Balzac. So it is their egg sandwich. They take an egg and they soak it in tea, in black tea,
Ooh,
and then
yes,
they make an egg salad sandwich out of it.
Oh my god.
Wow,
it's really good. It's it's really good, and it's one of the choices that you can choose for your tea or when you have afternoon tea. But the lady next to me kept saying Balzac.
Wow.
She was pronouncing an S instead of a Z. And she's like, I don't know if I'm hungry enough for two Balzac. So here they are talking about their lunch, and I am sitting next to them laughing my ass off, and Eddie's just like, what is wrong with you?
Oh my god, guys. That's kind of awesome, though.
Balzac.
So she's like, oh, I like Balzac. That's what she was saying. Like,
oh my god.
And I was like, and then she's like, but I don't know if I'm hungry enough for two Balzac. And then she said something else, too, but I was just laughing.
Oh my god.
So I had a very, entertaining Valentine's Day afternoon tea.
That's cool. That's really awesome. Did you guys have any other plans or that was
it? No, that was it because we knew we had to go to work, but we are thinking of maybe doing like a Valentine 2.0 at Disneyland on Sunday.
Ooh, exciting.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, that's cool. What about you, Jen?
Well, I'm living the single life, so... Nothing romantic or anything. I just ate a lot of chocolate.
That's cool though.
I stole some of the heart-shaped cookies Kristen brought in.
Oh yeah.
Well, you brought in cookies?
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Uh-huh. Nice.
Yeah, cause when they come in is when I get off of work, and I usually stick around for the book club. This time I didn't because I was sick, and I was just like sick, and on Valentine's Day, and I have to watch all these couples. Never mind, I'm going to sleep.
I like that. I didn't even realize it was Valentine's Day until like I opened my Facebook, and there was like just a myriad of pinks and reds and roses and glittery shit. And I'm just like, what the fuck's going on? And then I realized it was Valentine's Day.
Oh, I did say to everybody on my Facebook page, happy Valentine's Day, hoes.
yeah, that, and I was like, oh, I get that. That's cute. But yeah, I didn't do anything. I just worked. Pretty much. Yeah.
It's not very exciting. After a while, it was never exciting for me.
So, I love to give gifts and fun stuff on any little tiny holiday. So, and I, on Facebook every year people complain about Valentine's Day and it's a Hallmark holiday and this and that. But honestly, I just think that you should approach the holiday or the day as an opportunity, whether or not you think it's commercialized or not. Use it as an opportunity to tell people in your life that you love them, regardless if you're in a romantic relationship with them, whether it's friends, family, or a significant other. Telling people that are in your life that you care about them and that they mean a lot to you, I think is really important.
I did give my mom flowers. I forgot that.
Oh,
I did
see?
That.
That's nice. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah, Valentine's Day, me and my brother gave my mom flowers because she really likes flowers.
Yeah.
Because she used to be a flower girl.
Oh,
whatchamacallit, in back in Guatemala and stuff like that. That's what she did. She sold flowers. So she always has a soft spot for them. So on Valentine's Day, we like to be extra and give her like huge bouquets.
That's awesome. So does she prefer, what is her favorite flower?
Her favorite flowers are actually, lilies?
Oh,
calla lilies, because that's the ones that she used to grow those, and that's what she sold.
My grandmother had a black one in her backyard.
So goth.
Oh my gosh. Yes. And it was just, every time it would bloom, it was just so amazing, and I actually wanted calla lilies as, black calla lilies as my, my wedding bouquet. Mm-hmm. But they were out of season when, because I looked into it and it was going to be super expensive, like to fly them over from some other country.
Yeah.
So I actually just had fake flower bouquet that my mom had made at Michael's. But we got married on Halloween, so it was black and with black and purple flowers with like silver like ribbon and stuff.
Nice.
I have it somewhere, or my mom has it for me somewhere.
Somewhere.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. But yeah.
But yeah, that black calla lily makes me think of my grandmother all the time.
Yeah, so those are my mom's favorite flowers. I mean, I like orchids.
Mm-hmm.
Orchids are my favorite.
Although, they're so hard to maintain, though.
They are, which is why I don't grow them.
I've gotten many over the years of just like as gifts or thank yous or whatever. They never lasted more than like a month with me.
Mm. Yeah, I had some that the leaves were green for about 4 years, but they didn't bloom ever again.
Mm-hmm.
So I just got rid of them, but I should have kept them. I think if I did enough research, I could have probably
brought it back to life.
Yeah.
Well, Sarah, what did you do for Valentine's Day? You just poo-pooed the pink and red on your Facebook?
Screw Valentine's Day. No, I actually was upset because, I looked at my bank account.
Oh my god.
Oh.
Always an upsetting thing.
Yeah, it's a depressing thing, but mostly I was upset because there were some charges from Nicaragua and Frank told me he wasn't going to use the bank account. So, yeah, way to go, husband. on Valentine's Day. Yeah, so
Damn.
He spent it on the sunshine. No, I'm just kidding. Oh. No, he no, he
Comadres y Camas just took a very interesting turn.
Get back to us if you want more cheese, man.
This is our cheese man de la
semana. This is our cheese man de la semana. Ooh, dang.
I hadn't made it a point to look into the bank account, so what I did is I guess I logged in on Valentine's Day and that was what I saw. I wasn't prepared to see so little amount, and then when I scrolled, I noticed that there were some charges from Nicaragua, and I was like, I felt like Marge, And so then when Frank tried to contact me, I was like, yeah, okay, no. You know, and he's like, what's wrong? And I'm like, nothing. And he's like, can I call you? No. And he's like, what are you doing? I'm busy. So he knew something was wrong. He thought, well, I just wanted to let you know that, cause he was texting me. He hadn't called me yet. And he said, I just wanted to let you know that it's Valentine's Day and I'm thinking about you. And, even though we're not together. And I'm like, uh-huh. So then, eventually he did call me and then I melted like butter in his arms. And then I was happy again. And then he said, I'm just, you know, calling you just to say I love you. And I'm like, okay, great. And he said, he was going to call me again at between 6 and 7. So I finished working and I work from home. So basically I didn't leave my desk. I started just scrolling through our pictures from our Europe trip. So I was, you know, getting all in love again. Like I'm mm-hmm. like, oh, I'm happy. I'm in love again. Let's do this again. I'm thinking, waiting for that phone call. And then now it's fucking 9. No phone call. And I'm like, this motherfucker.
This is the best cheese mozzarella semana ever.
Oh my god. You don't know how much, oh my god, I'm living. This is like the real treatment.
So I'm sitting there and then my brother comes home. My brother comes home from dropping off my nephew. His girlfriend comes home from work and I'm still sitting at my desk and they're like, are you still working? And I said, no, I'm just kind of kind of getting rid of the bad pictures in our album. And I was waiting for Frank to call me. So around 9, 10 o'clock, he sends me a text and with the picture of him hanging out with his brother and his cousin having beers. And I'm like, I get it. Okay. And he's like, are you okay? I'm like, I'm fine.
I didn't realize he had family over there. Oh, well, yeah. That kind of makes me feel a little bit better that I always pictured him alone and sad drinking beer by himself.
No, he has plenty of family over there.
Oh, okay. Like, gotcha.
Yeah, his mom's there.
Oh, wait. Daughter. You said Nicaragua. Okay. Yeah. Never mind.
Yeah, no, he's not working right now. Yeah, okay. He's having the time of his life while his woman is sitting at her desk at work waiting for a measly phone call on Valentine's Day. No, I'm not sour. No, it's okay. I'm okay.
Well, I think that this is definitely, we could do a whole episode on
just the subject.
Yeah,
alone.
Just the subject. But we probably should get back to our comic book talk.
Now for the real chisme. Here's Kristen.
No, that was the real chisme. This is the comic chisme.
Some more chisme is Kristen. So I actually am super excited about this chisme that we heard today on Variety. Variety wrote an article on the Sabrina the Teenage Witch series that we've talked about here. Nice. On Comadre Comics that got picked up. Well, didn't get picked up, but I guess, yeah, got picked up by Netflix. It originally was going to be on CW as kind of like a partner.
Oh my God,
it was being developed for CW to be a partner series to Riverdale.
Ooh. Wow.
Yeah.
That would be so freaking awesome.
But I'm glad it didn't.
Oh, why?
Because I think Netflix is going to give it the give it what it deserves. Toss. Yes. Yeah. I mean, just Netflix, the stuff that they've been churning out when it comes to, comic book related material, I think is just really awesome. And, I think CW still does kind of like, I mean, when you say something is CW, quote unquote, you kind of know what you're getting.
And you kind of roll your eyes. Come on, let's be honest.
Just a little bit.
Just a tad bit.
I mean,
don't get me wrong. I'm all about the CW.
Oh no, I watch it.
But if this Sabrina the Teenage Witch is going to be more in the vein of Chilling Adventures, the book that we reviewed here on the show, I definitely am happy then that it's going to be on Netflix. So they have announced today that the two of the roles have been filled. One is Mary Wardell, which is the character in the book who is Sabrina's, like, teacher. I think she's her favorite teacher. I don't know if it was her English teacher. I can't remember.
It was English or theater, but I want to say English.
Oh yeah,
teacher.
Theater. I remember that because she took. So she is the character who actually gets taken over, possessed by Madame Satan.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
So they cast Madame Satan today by announcing that Michelle Gomez is going to take that role. And I do not watch Doctor Who, but apparently she is best known for her role of Missy on Doctor Who. I don't know what seasons or anything like that, but I'm kind of excited that this is kind of rolling along. Even more exciting is in this might have been information that was already released and it might have just gone over, I missed it, but in this Variety article they talked about that not only has it been picked up by Netflix, but it's a 20 episode, 2 seasons that has been already committed.
Ooh,
to.
Freaking amazing.
Yes.
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 Oh my god.
So we already know we're getting 2 seasons.
Yeah.
So
in my head, it's going to be tied to Riverdale. I want to believe that somewhere in like the Riverdale universe, the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina is happening. And all this tragic stuff is like going down.
Well, I've been hearing that there's kind of more like supernatural stuff happening in Riverdale. I haven't gone back to try to watch it again, but
yeah, I was gonna wait till it comes out on Netflix to stream it and just watch the whole thing.
Yeah,
but you're right. But even if they bring in a cameo appearance from anyone, I think it would be like it would go up like a notch. It would be great. I think it would be great.
In Sabrina, there's we see the Pussycats in Riverdale, but in Sabrina, the Pussycats are
vampires.
They're vampires. Yeah.
The Pussycats are vampires.
That was really cool. I thought that was and then I think there's like some another book which is Jughead the Hunger, where Jughead is a werewolf. Mm-hmm. And then there is one coming out.
Afterlife with Archie.
Well, Afterlife with Archie, where zombies, the zombie apocalypse overtakes Riverdale. And then there's another one coming out that's Veronica, which is gonna be a vampire, I think, I saw.
I don't know about that one. I haven't read that one, but that sounds interesting.
No, it hasn't come out yet. I saw it. I just saw a solicitation somewhere. But anyway, Aguirre Sacasa is just doing amazing work with the Archie universe, and I am just so excited about this Netflix stuff, and just to know that they're doing that they're casting and then they're moving along is super exciting. So that's my chisme. They also cast Ambrose. Do you guys remember her cousin?
Yes, that's right. I like him.
He was exiled from the Netherworld.
Came to live with them
and kind of started some trouble here and there.
Drama. Cousins do.
Yes. So the actor, I guess, is a newcomer. They didn't really say anything that he's been in. But it says that his name is Chance Perdomo. So
all these Latino names.
Yeah.
Latino sounding
names. So I don't know what their ethnicity is. I know that the Gomez woman, that she is a British actress.
Yeah.
Okay.
I recognized her when you showed me a picture. She came out in Doctor Who, I think, with the 12th Doctor, or was it the 11th? No, the 12th Doctor. And played the Master, the reincarnation of the Master, but this time as a woman, because the Master had previously been a man.
Oh, I remember this.
Oh. Yeah,
I don't watch it, but I remember this controversy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then and so she is a reincarnation of the Master, and now I know. I think that was kind of like a precursor to then whoever makes Doctor Who being all like, the BBC, yeah, being all like, okay, finally we're gonna do it. The Doctor's gonna be a woman now. Mm-hmm.
So this Madame Satan role, though, I remember in the book, I mean, that was part, it was, the Madam Satan parts were the most creepiest freaking parts.
Yeah.
And so I'm really looking forward to this. And in the Variety article, it actually talks about how this Sabrina show is going to be a horror TV show nice. Made in the vein of horror classics like Rosemary's Baby and The Exorcist.
Yes! I can't wait. Of course, that would be really cool.
I don't think that's the appropriate music, but we'll go with it.
So yes, there's my chisme, a little bit more chilling adventures of Sabrina. I think they're just calling it Sabrina, but I'm not really sure. But just based on what we've heard, it seems like that's the storyline, the one that we read in volume one that they're starting with.
Yes.
Oh, this is very exciting.
Very exciting.
Do you guys know who's cast as Sabrina? Or?
Oh, yes. Actually, they did talk about who was cast. It was somebody that I did not, that I didn't recognize. Mm-hmm. But Kiernan Shipka is the actress who will play Sabrina. I don't know what she's done in before.
But I need to look at an image to see if I've seen her. I probably have, maybe.
Do they know about... they're just starting to cast it, so they don't even have, like, a finalized date on it, right? Like,
no, in the article, there was no date. They did say 2018.
Okay, good.
So that's all I know.
I'm just logging this into my...
This little girl, I don't know what she... She says she's an American voice actress. She's best known for playing Sally Draper on AMC series Mad Men.
I love her, guys. Oh my God. Oh my God. My mind just blew up.
Oh,
okay. Yes, that's her. I love her. She's such a great actress. I actually, speaking of Mad Men, I just streamed and finished watching all 7 seasons of it. So she was one of the characters I liked.
Huh.
I found her eyes to be really haunting and beautiful.
She looks like Melissa Joan Hart to me.
A little bit, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So she voiced Janora, and I do recognize that.
Oh, I saw that,
so
yeah.
So I know her voice, I just never seen her before.
Right, from Avatar The Last Airbender.
From Avatar The Legend of Korra.
And The Legend of Korra, yeah.
So, she's pretty.
Yeah, she has these really haunting eyes. And she sort of has that, like, I wouldn't say the whatever kind of attitude, body language, and mostly she's too cool for the room, kind of. So it's definitely going to be completely different from the old season where it was like, slapsticky and, you know, like me slapping. Though. I know, it was great though.
But I'm down for this too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give me.
I mean, it had its time, but yeah, I'm so excited about
this. We've all grown up. We need this.
We need this. I want it.
Very exciting.
Oh, what is the malted liquor? What gets you drunker quicker? What comes in bottles or in cans? Beer. Can't get enough of it. Beer. How we really love it. Beer. Makes me think I'm a man. Beer. I could kiss and hug it, beer. But I'd rather chug it. Beer. Cut my belly out to here. Beer. I could not refuse it. Really.
All right, guys. Now it's time for our beer tasting segment. And, we would like to thank the sponsor.
I love that
of,
sound.
I know, right? We would like to thank the sponsor of today's beer. Tasting, and that's Compton Eric from the Mustache Cash Stash podcast.
It smells good.
Which they also record here, and they also do beer tasting. So, Kristen is pouring it out right now. And in the spirit of, February the 14th, what is this beer called?
This beer is called Always in Love. It's a hazy double IPA, and it's from the Green Cheek Beer Company, which is it's LA adjacent, in Orange, California. But I want to read the little, poem on it. It says, Green Cheek is for lovers. No, really, it is. If you're in love with love and lousy poetry, this one is for you. Don't worry. If your heart is full of holes, this hazy double IPA will fill you right up. Keep it cold, and pretty soon you'll be bragging, I'm always in love. And then it's followed up with drink while smiling.
Oh, that's so cute. I love it.
So it doesn't really say a lot or anything about what is in the beer. So I don't know, other than the fact that it's a hazy double IPA. So I like double IPAs. And then I don't even see, oh, it's an 8.0.
Yeah, when I was looking online for more information on this, this one was a limited can release, but they do have this on tap.
It smells so good.
They have this on tap, and they, like Kristen said, it's L.A. adjacent. The address is 2294 North Natavia Street, Suite C, as in cat, in Orange, 92865. And it's called Green Cheek Beer Company. So it looks like they're a happy folk. So let's give it a taste.
The artwork on the can is super cute, too.
It is cute. So on the website, it also just has the little poem. It doesn't really have any explanation of what's in the beer or the hops that were used or anything. So
all I know is it's delicious and it smells pretty damn good.
It smells the bouquet of this beer. It made my mouth water as I started pouring it.
It's really good. I like it.
It smells very citrusy.
Yeah, definitely can taste the citrus in it.
I can smell the rose petals. I'm just kidding.
I'm all really? Oh my gosh. That's so good.
Delicious.
That is so good. It's a double IPA, but it's so freaking smooth.
It is.
And I can taste at the end, like, it's like a citrusy, I kind of taste like pineapple, kind of, at the end.
I don't know, but it's delicious.
I can definitely taste the citrus and...
Oh my gosh.
My taste buds might be a little bit, dulled, because I am sick.
Yeah, you're sick.
But it is, have you ever smelled like a bouquet of roses?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a little bit how it is without it being too flowery. Mm-hmm. And the taste is...
It's so good.
I don't know if you guys have ever tried candied rose petals.
No.
No.
Mm-hmm. It tastes a little bit like that.
Interesting.
And so there's this kind of like this just this little bit of... bitterness that's really, really that goes really well, but I don't.
There is a little bit of sweetness, which is not what you expect when you're drinking an IPA, let alone a double IPA.
But yeah, there's just a hint of sweetness, and I do like
the fact that this is on tap somewhere. Like, I want to get in my car and drive to that place right now.
Yeah, I wonder how far it is. But
Orange
isn't.
I mean, not too far. We're in the South Bay, where it's not too far. It's worth a drive.
It definitely is.
Mm.
Mm. The smell is delicious.
Yeah, it's a sweetness that like I said, to me it tastes like pineapple, kind of. Citrusy pineapple.
Yeah, I'm gonna stick by the candied rose petals. I don't know, maybe somebody has eaten them, but where did I eat them? I ate them.
I've heard of them. I've never had them though.
I think I ate them at a French restaurant I was at, somewhere in Westwood.
Fancy.
Your girl's gotta treat herself.
if we're ready to rate our beer, I am going all the way with Rigid with this thing. I really like it that much. This to me is an 8.0, so it is a little bit on the higher end of alcohol by volume, but if you're at home, I mean, the beer is called Always in Love. So if you're at home with your honey and you're wanting a sexy romantic night, definitely pop this baby open. Unfortunately, when we get the ones that are, limited releases in cans, we can't really say, oh, go buy it. But the fact that it's on tap, definitely, you have a place that you can go to drink it.
I mean, I'm pretty sure they released it for February, so there might still be some floating around somewhere.
Where did he get it at exchange or?
No, at the place.
Oh, at the place. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Oh, nice.
Okay. I, just for that, would want to drive over there to see if they have any left so I could buy some.
It looks like it's we're going to plan good. A road trip.
I really like it too. I'm going to have to say that this is a really fresh taste.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really fresh. I don't know how to explain it. It's,
with the amount of different breweries that there are in existence, to me, I feel like it's so hard to stand out, and especially with an IPA. IPA is like a lot of breweries, kind of make those their signature beers. And so when you drink so many, you tend to just taste ones that taste the same over and over again. And this one definitely stands out. Everything you're saying, Sarah, I completely agree. It stands out and it's fresh and I love it.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. It definitely stands out. This is something that, I actually started following them on Instagram because I was so excited, to try this beer. And, then I read that it was on tap and I was like, well, that's going to be great. And I actually,
and is there a hotel nearby?
Nice. And,
Holiday Inn.
My brother, Compton Eric, gave us 2 cans. So, he said one you can enjoy with your husband when he comes back. So I'm excited. Maybe.
Sorry, Frank. There ain't going to be no beer when you come back.
So, but this has got me feeling all warm and fuzzy in the right places. So, I'm going to go full on this. No, you know what? I'm going to go rigid. I mean, it really stands alone. It's fresh. It's different. There's a hint and flavors that are just...
When something's rigid, it does stand alone.
I need no help at all. Oh, my God. I really like it. It's got a crisp taste to it.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
For an IPA. And it's... It's really good. I really wish I could like taste more of it.
Oh, cause you're sick.
Cause I am sick, so that does dull it a little bit. And because of that, I'm gonna give it a full, but I really do like it. It's enjoyable. I think it's something that I would love to share with somebody.
I think it would be worth it to find other things that are happening around there, so go and have some on tap. Do something else, and then...
I'm always looking for breweries in the area too. And like I said, Orange County is not that far, so I think a nice little afternoon trip somewhere just to. Was there food there too?
I didn't ask about that, but
I love it when there's a brewery that has food.
Yeah. I know, you know what, right now Phantom Carriage is pairing a beer with a dessert.
Yes, I saw that.
And I'm just like,
I saw that for Valentine's Day. Nice.
Yeah, I'm like, wow, if all breweries did that, they would get like a bigger, I think, female population as well because we love the desserts, so.
Phantom Carriage, is a brewery that is here in the South Bay, where we are all at, not too far from where we're actually recording, and even if you don't go to get the dessert pairing, their food is amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not quote unquote bar food. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is bar food whereas, you know, they have the nachos and the burgers or, you know, whatever it was that they had.
The sausages.
Yeah, they had pretzels, but it is like the quality is just so good. And everything is just delicious. So if you ever do have opportunity in Los Angeles to go to Phantom Carriage. And they actually are celebrating their 3-year anniversary in March, I believe.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Right on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and their aesthetic is on point.
Yes.
So I'm all about Phantom
it's
Carriage.
It's a goth setup, and there's like old horror films playing in the background. Yeah, it's really cool.
It's dark and mysterious. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can just, you know, just blend into a corner.
You know, when I was there with you girls, we were there in the middle of the day. I'd really like to see like what the scene is there at night when people are there drinking and partying and having a good time.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. like I said, it's really good. It's standing out alone. It's really great. I'm really happy with this. It's definitely a rigid for me and it's a rigid for Kristen and it's a full for Jen. So, check it out guys. And like we said, it's on tap. So, head on over there. You will not regret it. Most definitely not. All right, guys, we are ready for our book review. Jen, what's in store for us today?
So today we are going to be reviewing Ultimate Comics Spider-Man by Brian Michael Bendis, Sarah Pichelli, featuring the breakout hero, Miles Morales, as Spider-Man. And I am hyped! I don't know if it's come across off in other episodes or not, but I love Miles Morales. He is my adopted comic son. I would die for Miles Morales because he is so pure and I love him.
Oh, I love him too. For the longest time, I was trying to get into Spider-Man books, and there were so many freaking Spider-Man books. Yes. Oh my gosh. Most of them were Peter Parker. There's the one Ben Reilly that no one wants to talk about. and then there is Miles. Miles was my Spider-Man. I loved all of the Miles Morales books that I read. And not until Chip Zdarsky's Superior Spider-Man came out did I, was it Superior? Not Superior.
No, Peter Parker Spectacular.
Spectacular. That I know is an S word, an S adjective. Spectacular. It was not until I started reading that did I actually start to, enjoy Peter Parker Spider-Man. I just love Miles, but I had never read this. I've never read his origin. Yeah. So when Sarah was like, "It's February is Black History Month. We should do, we should talk about some books of black creators or black characters." Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Well, Miles is Afro Latino, uh-huh. so yes. that was perfect."
Absolutely, perfect. Yeah. It was important, I think, for me to highlight Afro-Latinos or African-American creators or writers because it's Black History Month, and we know that we got to give love to our African-American brothers mm-hmm. and sisters.
But, it had been so long since I read this book that rereading it just made me fall in love with Miles all over again as a superhero and just where he was coming from and everything. And it's such a great book. Miles himself, one of the things that I think makes him stand out from Peter Parker and also all the spider people that we've met throughout the years is just how young he is. He was even younger than Peter Parker when he was a bit. He was in grade school, mm-hmm. which is basically, he was in elementary school. So he got bit when he was like 10, 11 years mm-hmm. old. And he didn't do anything for like a cool year or so after he was bit. But it was only in the Ultimates universe where Peter Parker, who himself had been bitten also earlier, so it was about him mostly being in his high school years and trying to be a superhero. And spoiler alert, in the Ultimates universe, Peter Parker dies because he took a bullet for Captain America. And so Miles hears about this and he still hasn't really taken up the mantle. He knows he has these powers now and that he has something similar to Peter Parker, but it isn't until about halfway through the book that Miles decides, after he sees Peter Parker die, that he's just like, okay, I'm going to do something with these powers. Mm-hmm. I got these powers for a reason, and I'm not going to be a coward. And I'm just like, as I was reading it, I was just like, you're 11.
I know.
You're 11.
Yeah.
You're like,
he's like my nephew's age.
Yeah.
Which is so cool.
When you think about it, when you think in relation to it, like, he's just in sixth grade. Mm-hmm. It's literally not his job to do that.
Right.
And I think the fact that he decides he takes the PM to like, I'm gonna do this, I think that's what makes him a hero. And I've had arguments with some people, mostly at Jeffrey's, who are very fond of Peter Parker mm-hmm. and they don't understand why Miles needs to exist. One of them says was just like, with great power comes no personality.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
That's harsh.
You fight Jen and then you fight me.
Yeah. Well, he's no longer working now, so I'm guessing you know who it is, Kristen. And so I would always get into arguments. I'm just like, that, like, I'm sorry, and what's Peter Parker's personality? It's just like, what does that mean? Do you mean he's not a well-developed character? Because he's a very well-developed character.
Yeah.
And I may have some issues with Bendis and how he chooses to portray stuff, but he can write teenagers and he can write them very well.
Mm-hmm.
And so him saying that Miles doesn't have a personality, I'm just like, bitch, where? And so, I also own the first issue of Ultimate Comics Spider-Man. It took me a while to hunt down. But in the back matter of that issue number one, Bendis is addressing some comics fans that he got emails and letters and stuff from. And a lot of them were very upset with him, for one, not only killing off Peter Parker, but then they were saying, like, why do we need a black Spider-Man? Mm-hmm. And in many of the responses, Brian Michael Bendis said, why not?
Yeah.
And that, honestly, that's the legit truth. Right. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
Why not? And it's just like, first of all, Ultimate Comics Peter Parker is a side character. Like, he's the main character in his own title, but he still takes second place
mm-hmm.
to actual Peter Parker in, you know, the 616 universe.
Right.
He's
yeah.
like, no matter how you cut it, like, he's not overly important.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in the Ultimate Comics universe he was, and like, yeah, like, I have read some of the Ultimate Comics Peter Parker stuff, and it's really good, but I'm glad he went in that direction that he gave us Miles, because I don't care what other people say, I think felt Miles was needed.
And why do you need a black Spider-Man? Because Brooklyn, hello?
Yeah. Oh my god, it's almost as if black people exist in
right.
New York.
Right,
wow.
Exactly.
Wow, what?
Wow. I mean, it just, every time I think about it, I think about that movie Brooklyn, where Spike Lee was like, you call the movie Brooklyn, but there's no black people in it? I don't get it. Like,
oh,
it's why the heck not? I enjoy this book great. I'm not gonna lie, I teared up a couple of times during this book. I really did not expect that at all, but I think it hit, some points,
Oh my gosh. And also the fact that we see Gonke from the beginning.
Yes.
Oh my god, okay. He is my favorite sidekick.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. And while I was rereading it, I got so much more bitter towards the Spider-Man Homecoming movie.
Oh, yes.
I can agree with that.
It made me so upset.
Yes.
Because I was just like, literally it would not have taken that much to replace Peter Parker. And I do love the Peter Parker that they did. He was amazing.
Yeah.
He was cute. He was a hero and everything. But like, oh my god, you gave Miles a storyline.
Yeah.
To Peter Parker.
Right.
That's Miles' story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they took it away from him, and I don't think we're ever gonna get a Miles storyline.
But they're doing the animated,
yes,
film.
They are.
Yeah.
That's right.
There's an animated film, and I'm excited for that one too, but it's just like, it just burns that they had this storyline. I know where they got every single bit of inspiration for that movie, and they got it from Ultimate Comics, Spider-Man Miles, and they decided not to go with Miles. Even though we now have 6 Peter Parker movies. 6!
Right?
6 of them.
Right.
6 of them. You'd think they get tired of killing off Uncle Ben, but nope. Let's keep killing off Uncle Ben.
Well, right? So there was hope. There was definitely hope in, for a Miles Morales at some point, because, in the movie, his uncle is the guy in the parking garage that,
yes.
that, is it Peter Parker goes and confronts him or something? Mm-hmm. I can't remember. But that's Miles' uncle.
Right, uh-huh. right.
And so there was a lot of, speculation and hope that, okay, introducing the uncle is like a little bit of, foot in the door for possibly a Miles character to come in.
In the movie, his dama. Who is the actor who played him?
His last name is Glover.
Donald Glover.
Yes, I love that man. By the way,
he says something like, "Yeah, I have a little nephew here and stuff like that." And I'm just like, "Okay, cool, that's it." You know, like Iron Man was 2008. We're now in 2018.
Is it Donald?
Yeah,
yes,
I think something
it is.
Like
it
that.
Is him.
And we're now 2018. When did that movie come out? Early 2017? 2016?
It's been already? Oh my gosh. Yeah. I feel like I just saw it last weekend.
Yeah, the uncle, he's referred to as the Prowler.
The Prowler, okay.
Yeah, as kind of a name.
Yeah.
And so, I'm gonna get a Miles movie in 15 years?
Oh,
yeah, I know. That sucks, dude.
It's just, yeah.
It's not fair. This is a really great story and really great characters. I mean, like you said, Ganke, the Prowler. I feel for him. I really do.
Mm-hmm. Everything about the story from the I think that's why it's the same situation why I really like Robbie Reyes It's again why I really like Miles is that I can see this character. I can see his parents. I can see his relatives. His situation is very, very real.
Yeah.
Because the book opens up that Miles is going to a raffle or a lottery.
Mm-hmm.
To see if he can get admission into a very prestigious charter school.
Yeah,
exactly.
And I was just absolutely reminded of how I went through a lot of effort to get my little sister into a magnet school.
Mm-hmm.
And I was praying so much every week until we got the acceptance letter that she was going to be in that I could breathe a sigh of relief because I did not want her to go to the school that I did, to the school that my brother did, and to any of the other nearby schools that other kids went, or that some of my friends went to, and they've all told me like horrible stories of. And just remember my high school experience and I'm just like, no, your girl's gonna do her best to get her little sister into a good school. And we succeeded. And just seeing that and then seeing, and Miles does too, but it, like in the art and in the background, you can see all these other kids crying that they could not get in.
And he actually also mentions that. He's like, but why me? Why me? Because if it's me, then that means it's not somebody else. Yeah. So you see that he has this like, this
awareness.
Yeah, uh-huh. Social awareness already.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like the panels in this specific scene that you guys are referring to, because once Miles' name, which is the last name called, in this lottery, you see actually no dialogue bubbles. You just see other students' profile and they're tearing up and they have like a sad look on their face. And I thought, man, that's really, it, one of the girls is like actually holding onto her backpack and crying. And it's crazy. I mean, you're happy for him, but at the same time, you realize that there's so many other kids that are not going to get the opportunity to go to a better school.
Have either of you ever seen the documentary Waiting for Superman?
I haven't yet. No.
No.
Okay. So, Waiting for Superman, actually has nothing to do with Superman, but it's actually a documentary about charter schools and about the public school system and how people that live in neighborhoods where there's not enough money filtering into the public school systems, try to grasp onto any little hope that they can for a good, opportunity of a good education for their children, and they enter into these lotteries all over the place, and it's like freaking, I don't know that this is the right percentage or numbers that I'm giving, but let's just say, for example, there's like 1,000 kids who are vying for like 25 spots.
Yeah, exactly.
And so this documentary actually followed the story of a handful of kids who were trying to get into a particular charter school. And this that scene reminded me of that, and it reminded me of how very real that this situation is to a lot of families.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, not too long ago, for my cousins, they've already graduated from Bryn Mawr, both of the sisters did, but there was a time where we didn't want them to go to the school district here in Compton, because this is where we live.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're really bright girls, and we actually found a new charter school for them to go to, which was at an old church. But it turned out to be so amazing, because they were inspired to go on to college, and they went on to private college, Bryn Mawr. And I mean, they went on to live like a life that I don't think would have been a possibility mm-hmm. had they stayed in the LA Unified School District.
Mm-hmm.
And because of their success and because of their inspiration, I actually went ahead and tried to do that for my little brother, which he's right now and also in a charter school.
Mm-hmm.
He's in Animo, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a hard reality for us middle class or lower middle class
yeah.
or just yeah. lower class, where we don't have the ability to go to a nice school district
right.
and have all these wonderful after school activities or field trips or anything like that, or anything that can inspire students to be more aware about going to school and moving on to college. So this was like Jen said, like Kristen said, these scenes really hit close to home.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I really enjoyed this book. I really like the development of you know, we get to see actually how he becomes Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
It was really good. You could see the dynamic between his uncle, where he tries to branch out and have a relationship with his uncle, but his father has forbidden him from
yeah.
seeing him. Mm-hmm. And because obviously he's a bad influence, he's a prowler, he's made bad choices in his life, but that doesn't hinder the fact that he loves his family.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to see that dynamic and so forth. And I actually have a lot of questions for you guys off the air, because I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but I'm really interested in some of Miles' superpowers.
Yeah, actually, I was telling Jen that after I read this, that I had been reading Miles Morales books, and it never dawned on me that he had some of the powers that he had until I read this book. I was like, oh my gosh, okay, that makes a lot of sense. I didn't realize that, because he has the powers of the particular spider that bit him has like the ability to do certain things that not the same way that the spider powers manifested in a different way with Miles than they did in Peter.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming Spider-Woman as well, because Spider-Woman makes a cameo appearance in this book
okay.
too.
Oh yeah, and I explained that to Kristen as well. So not only, I mean, I'm pretty sure we're reviewing the books. So
it's been out for a while.
It's been out for a while. But one of the powers that he has is something called the Venom Sting, or Venom Bite, but he can shock and zap people and
yeah.
kind of like stun them.
Mm.
And it hurts. And I think he can control the intensity that he does it, so he can make it really hurt. Not in this book itself, but that is one of his powers. Another power that he has is that he can go invisible. He can blend in.
Yeah, he has camouflage.
Mm-hmm. That's the one that caught me by surprise.
Yeah.
I'm just like, wait, what's going on?
Yeah. Yeah. So he has some of the same abilities as Peter, like superhuman strength, speed, agility, ability to cling to most surfaces. He has spidey sense.
Mm-hmm.
There's an actual panel in the book where he's like, there's that feeling again right before he gets like,
head,
right before he gets kicked in the face.
Yeah.
also with him, does it show it in this book, the web shooters?
Not yet.
Oh, okay.
The web shooters themselves, and this is something in, the web shooters themselves were made by Peter Parker,
exactly.
both in the 616 and in the Ultimates universe.
Yeah.
So, he can't shoot them out, but The web spinners were made by Peter Parker. Later on in the series itself, Aunt May and Gwen Stacy hear about, cause Gwen Stacy's alive in the Ultimates universe.
Yeah. She actually makes a cameo appearance in this book.
Yeah, she does. She gives the "with great power comes great responsibility" speech to him.
Uh-huh. And so they hear about that there's a new Spider-Man, and understandably they're a little bit upset,
yeah.
But they go themselves to see who this is, and they are impressed with Miles, and then they're like, okay, you're a good successor to the throne or whatever, and they give...
That just like, I want to cry right now.
Yeah.
Aww.
And so Aunt May gives Peter's web shooters to Miles.
Oh.
Okay, which universe is Gwen Stacy, Spider-Gwen.
Spider-Gwen?
Yeah.
She is in a different universe. I believe it's like 2149 or something like that. It's a long series.
All these numbers confuse me, especially when you have crossover books and, books like, Web Warriors and all kinds of stuff. Like, I know 616 is the main universe and all the other one. And I knew Ultimates, I just don't know what the number is.
Ultimates has its own number as well,
yeah.
But it's just known as the Ultimates.
Right.
And technically the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, is another universe that is also canon in the comics
itself.
And it has a number like 15.
Oh, MCU has a number?
Yeah, MCU has a number.
Interesting.
They all have numbers. It gets very confusing. Very
it does.
Fast. But Spider-Gwen is from another universe.
Gotcha.
So yeah. And, spoiler alert, her and Miles hook up. But this is later. This is a lot later. Miles has been on quite a journey.
I didn't really like that, honestly, when it was happening. I wanted him to be with Ms. Marvel.
I did too! Oh, oh my god! Mood! Big mood!
Wow.
They were so cute.
Cause he had such a crush on her. It was so cute.
It was so cute. And then you could kind of see that she was like, oh, you're kind of cute too. And I was just like, oh my god!
But I always saw her as just a little bit older than him, so
me
then
too.
She was kind of like, oh, this little kid, like, yeah, you're cute, but like, you know, you're just a little kid.
Yeah.
I don't know what their actual age difference was, if there was one.
It's like a year or two.
But yeah, the way that she carried herself, and because she was in Champion, she was the leader of the group, and everyone kind of like looked up to her. Mm-hmm. So I guess that maybe that's why.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
So if you want to see, if you want to read a book,
Cyclops who?
If you want to read a book where Ms. Marvel and Miles are in it together with some of the other younger superheroes like Nova, Visions,
baby Cyclops,
yes, young Cyclops and Vision's daughter. What's her name?
Vivian.
Yes.
Yeah.
Vivian. And also.
Totally awesome Hulk.
Amadeus Cho. They all band together to form the Champions, and I highly recommend it. Mark Waid writes it, and I don't think it's still going though. I think that after Secret Empire ended, everyone kind of went their own way. But I highly, highly recommend Champions. It's so good.
Yeah, it's really good.
Just kidding.
Sorry, I was looking at the book and I was just like, but I was going to address something that you said.
Spider-Woman has I noticed, has a different set of powers than Miles and Peter Parker.
Yeah, she is actually, this Spider-Woman is a clone of Peter Parker, a female clone.
Wow.
Yeah. So the Ultimates comics had their own
Clone Wars,
I guess. I think that's technically Star Wars.
Clone conspiracy.
There's
so many clone things that happen around Spider-Man.
God.
It's like silly.
It's silly. I guess everybody wants a piece part of Peter Parker. And Spider-Woman is she's a clone of Peter Parker. And I think her name is Jessica, as well as Jessica Parker.
Mm-hmm.
She actually confronts Miles about, you know, cause Miles is wearing Peter's.
Yes, okay, that part.
That Yes.
That storyline where Ganke basically brings, does Ganke bring it home or he brings it home?
Ganke brings it home.
Okay. Because he actually used it for...
His Halloween costume from the year before. Yes. That's right. And he gives him his Spider-Man, Peter Parker Spider-Man Halloween costume. It was like, hey, you know, you since you want to be Spider-Man, you know, here's a costume. You have to have a costume. So Miles is literally running around New York in a quote unquote Peter Parker costume, which is a Halloween costume, and it catches the attention of a lot of people.
Well, yeah. The ongoing joke is
it's in bad taste. Yeah.
Like actually, when Ganke gave it to him, he was like, I don't know about this. I think this is in bad taste.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, you got to protect your identity. So then he puts it on, and then whichever person he encounters, like, that's in bad taste. But at first, they're saying, oh, I thought he was dead. I mean, because everybody knows that he died. And so everybody's kind of taken aback. They're like, who is this guy? But he has powers. Mm-hmm. And it's in bad taste. So.
One thing with Ganke that I realized was... it's a character flaw of his is that he cannot keep his mouth shut.
No, he can't. He truly cannot.
Because when their third roommate comes in, the first thing he says is, "Oh, do you have superpowers too?" And in Miles Morales, in Spider-Man, Miles Morales Spider-Man book, there was a storyline where, Miles also, Ganke, kind of
spills
the beans to multiple people. And, Miles gets super, super upset because it puts him in a really difficult position. So I see that goes as far back as this, origin story. Yeah.
since the inception of Spider-Man, Miles Morales.
So we do talk about the fact that Miles is Afro-Latino, so I think it's worth it for us to mention that his mother is Latina. Mm-hmm. She's
Puerto Rican.
She's Puerto Rican. There's like different stories online, but I just think people got it wrong. But she's Puerto Rican. Some people were saying she's Cuban, and Jen's like, it's not Florida.
I mean, it
makes sense for her to be. Yeah. And I think I've also just seen Puerto Rican in multiple places. But the one thing that I'm super disappointed in is even though we know that he's Afro-Latino, his ethnicity is not, other than the fact that his skin color is black, we don't really see a lot of like cultural stuff going on. Mm-hmm. Like I wanted it to be more apparent. I wanted to see more Latino, Latinidad?
Yeah.
Even if it was just like pan dulce on the table in the morning for breakfast or something, you know?
And we don't really get that until later on in the Spider-Man solo title.
Uh-huh.
Title of Miles' story. So it's, and I believe we get a bit of it, not only that one, but a bit of it, it's been a while. I believe there's like 5 volumes of the Ultimate Spider-Man line, and then they reinterpret it to Ultimate Miles Morales.
Yeah.
And then it goes Spider-Man.
Just Spider-Man. I didn't read any Ultimates other than this. The only Spider-Man that I've read is, the only Miles Spider-Man I read is just the title Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. But in that book, you get a lot more of it, and I don't know if it's just that people critiqued the writer or what it was, but the mom often uses a lot of Spanish words. Mm-hmm. The grandmother comes in to play, and you see it a lot more with her too. So and just culturally, the dynamic between Miles's mom and his grandmother too. I wanted to and was hoping to see more of that in this book.
This book is more focused on like his origin and stuff like that, and that would have been really cool, but it's Bendis, so
yeah.
I mean, Bendis, he's cool,
and there was only three or four panels with the mom and the dad. And yeah. we see more of the dad when his dad is expressing, disapproval about,
him hanging out with his uncle.
Well, not only that, but, talking about, because I think there was some commotion going on and he said, I don't know why the mutants and all these freaks just leave us alone. And so Miles.
Cause you see, in that panel, in that scene, I think you see where Miles is just about to like just let it all spill. And then his dad, makes that statement. And so Miles kind of just like takes it all back and he's like, okay, I can't trust.
Because my dad doesn't like mutants. He's going to not like me or, you know, like, I just rather not tell him.
Yeah.
You know, and, and I get that. I mean, I know that, that's kind of the way he's thinking because he's so young. I mean, I feel like if he was a little older and he could just explain it to his dad. Mm-hmm. And, it should be okay.
Well, I don't want to spoil anything, but.
There's a lot of information, that, you don't know in this book, but that comes out at some point of why his dad might have that negative attitude towards them.
Also, if you really want to cry, read volume 4.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't know if I want to cry right now. but yeah, like you were saying, because of his antics all around, New York City, and there was like also, the Daily Bugle he mentions, is not being very kind to him.
Yeah.
He's saying that, copycat Spider-Man is running amok in New York City. He catches the attention of certain people. Do we want to say who?
Go ahead.
He catches the attention of Spider-Woman, who is in cahoots with Iron Man and
Nick Fury.
And we get the Nick Fury that we've seen in the films.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So we get a Samuel L. Jackson Nick Fury. So that's really cool, too.
It's very cool.
I was concerned because, Nick Fury kind of gives them the nod of approval to be Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And I was concerned because he's so young.
Yeah. And that was kind of the thing is that they mentioned in the book that he wasn't going to get a chance until he kind of proved himself without meaning to, by taking down one of the supervillains. And, and so Nick Fury gives him an outfit, like a new fitted outfit, and he's just, and Spider-Woman tells him, you get one chance. Because when you think about it, like, Peter was a kid too, and while he's a kid, like, what are you gonna do to stop him? Are you gonna put him on lockdown? He's just a kid.
Yeah.
Like, you can't, if a kid wants to do something, the only way to stop them is to put them on lockdown. And even then, they'll just climb out the window and go party with a friend. speaking from experience. Both in that I had to sneak out a window and I caught my little sister sneaking out a window.
I used to sneak my boyfriend in the window.
Wow. I didn't do any of that. My parents were like real detectives. Like they could spot anybody who ate McDonald's that day.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's like little things like a napkin or a piece of fry. I mean, they were just like that. Or they would like say, so you know what you did today? You should just confess because
oh my God.
She's using psychological warfare on you.
Exactly. See, the thing is, they just were fishing for information, and then I would volunteer.
I swear, until I was like at least 12 years old, I legit thought my mom had eyes in the back of her head.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah. So I'm just, I didn't do any of that. I was just like, I'm just going to wait.
After the first time I snuck around, I knew my mom couldn't know everything, so.
Yeah, by the time I was sneaking boyfriends in the window, I was past 12.
No, I mean, even then, they were just like, they ruled with an iron fist. Yeah. So I was like, the one time I tried to sneak out, I unfortunately left footprints on the mud in front of my... After that, it was all over.
Oh, that's funny.
It was bad. Oh my dad, even like in the morning, like when he left for work, he made it a point to, hit the screen, because I had left it ajar. He hit it. I was like, damn. Yeah, that's not cool. Oh, not doing this again. But anyway, I digress. Do you guys want to, emphasize anything else on this book because I just loved it. I love the dynamic between Gonke and Miles. It's super awesome. Mm-hmm. I like the emotion he's feeling of feeling torn between telling his dad because his dad feels so strongly against mutants or people with special powers. Mm-hmm. So I really like this book. Are you guys ready to rate it?
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with 3 conchas.
Mm-hmm.
Going with 3 conchas because I want to see more.
Yeah.
I think we just had a taste of where it's coming from, and I really liked it. And like I said, I broke out into a little bit of tears. I mean, when they showed the death of Peter Parker, I thought that was – it was really brief, but I felt like because I've been so – that's the only Spider-Man I've known. I felt, like, really emotional about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel really torn about how – young he is and his dilemmas with school and his family and where he's coming from. So I'm going to give it 3 conchas and I really would like to see what else is going to happen with this character. And like you said, this has been out for a while, so I'll be able to catch up.
Yeah, and you made a good point too with you were saying with his dilemma with school. And that's one thing that you see, consistently in the storylines of a lot of the young superheroes, because you, at the end of the day, we forget that they're teenagers and they're in high school. Mm-hmm. They're doing all this stuff flying around. I mean, there's a lot of storylines of where Miles has just been out all night doing stuff and then is asleep the next day in school because he's tired because he's just been doing, and that's with a lot of other of the champions too. So I think that kind of like development of like just who it's like a coming of age story, honestly. Mm-hmm. And I really like those kinds of stories with, you know, teens trying to, find out who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And now that you mentioned it, it's just, this story only gets better.
Yes.
And I really do love it, but just knowing where it goes, this gets maybe 2 or 3 conchas. Yeah. Just because I know where it goes and the potential that it has. And this is just like, but it's still so good. All right. I'm just 3 conchas. it's 3 conchas. The rest, like, it's just, this is a good story. And it didn't have a lot of, like, we know Miles is Afro-Latino, mm-hmm. but we don't really get that from the first book. Or even, like, I'm even going to say, or even from the second or third book. It isn't until, like, more later on in the story that we start to see it a bit more when his mom starts coming out more in the book. And, but it's so good. It's so good. I cannot recommend this book enough. It's 3 conchas, yeah.
Can I ask a question? I know that you just touched on the subject that we see more of his mother, like, in the fourth book. And I think that's only because he's in this academy, so he actually is living at this high school.
Yes.
Junior high. So I think that's why he's not really Latino-esque, I guess. Mm-hmm. What did you call it? Latinidad? Latinidad. There's not enough Latinidad, but like you said, we see more of her in the fourth book, so I think that's where that comes in. So I don't think they were trying not to bring that out. I think it's just the progression of the storyline.
The progression of the storyline and all that, yeah, definitely. And you know,
and I'm just gonna go out there and say it. When it's a white man writing the story, those things are not forefront in their minds.
Yeah.
And it's not a negative thing, or anything. It's just the way that it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's, those are the things that, like, to him, you know, coming down the stairs or coming into the kitchen in the morning and having, you know, huevos rancheros or beans on, even, you know, refried beans. I had refried beans for breakfast, like, for the first 12 years of my life.
Yeah.
So, like, those kinds of things, if culturally you didn't experience it, then you're not going to think about placing it in your story.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And this is, like, where you can see the difference in something like Day Tripper. When
Day
Tripper, you see it. And whereas here in Spider-Man is that it's, like, it's the main focus of this is that superhero.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Everything else is a background. So it's about the journey from him being just a kid to being a superhero.
Mm-hmm.
So, whereas in something but that's like Day Tripper, which was created by Brazilian brothers.
Right.
It's just like they know to add those little tea details and those little markers of identity into their book that they don't even really think about.
Yeah.
It's just edit. It's just reality. It's just how they grew up. Mm-hmm. Whereas with this, it's about the fantastical. It's about being a
right.
hero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Which, again, not a critique. It's like, it's why I read it, is that I do like my capes and tights. Exactly. Well, my capes and tights stories, but I can appreciate those little bits of detail as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I also am going to give it 3 conchas. I love Miles Morales. I loved this book. I loved reading the origin, of a character that I've grown to love, reading the stories where his character and his world has developed a lot more than what we've seen here. And Jen is absolutely correct. It only gets better. Mm-hmm. And I totally would like to go back and read more of the ultimate stuff. So 3 conchas and just not giving it any champurrado or anything like that. Just because I really wanted more of, or I was hoping that there would be a little bit more that it would be more apparent, I guess, that he was Afro-Latino.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it took me a while to figure out. Like, even though the last name, I was just like, I was saying in my head, Morales, Morales, Morales.
Yeah.
It never really clicked until, like, the third or fourth book. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, oh, he's half Hispanic. it should have clicked more because I thought his mom was just light-skinned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, she's Latina.
All right, guys. Well, that's 3 conchas each all around. And now it's time for On My Radar. And here to bring us On My Radar is Jen.
So, On My Radar are 2 new books that came out this past week
on Valentine's Day.
Yay! And one of them, both of these are basically specials. One was an 80-page giant. The other one was a winter special. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to start off with the winter special, which is The Swamp Thing Winter Special, and also an 80-page giant. And this, it's basically 2 stories. One was written by Tom King, and it was absolutely amazing.
It was so good.
It was so good. I got teary-eyed.
Wow.
I did too. I was bawling. I was reading it in the car on the way home from work on Tuesday, and I was bawling my eyes out.
Wow.
And it's Tom King is truly a master in storytelling. He's so good. But in this short story, Swamp Thing is basically he has been cut off from the green, which is
Yeah.
So if you don't know much about Swamp Thing is basically an avatar of the green, which is the personification of, like, I guess plant life,
yeah,
and, like, green and living things. And he's been cut off by it by a snowstorm, and he has been by not only a snowstorm but specifically a snow monster, and he has a little boy with him who he's trying to save, and it's just as the story progresses, he gets weaker and weaker because the longer the snow is there, the longer the green thing, basically the green place is cut off from him, and he is basically dying without his connection to the green. And it's just, I don't want to spoil too much about it, but the way it resolves, it tore my heart out. I was just like, oh my god, no!
Mine too!
And it's, oh god, there's just this one full page, like, for like 2-page spread that is just amazing. Like, the artist, who was the artist for this? I didn't quite pay attention to it. But the artist for the Tom King story is, by Jason Fabok. Jason Fabok. And it's so good. And it's just, there's a scene in here where the Swamp Thing cuts off his own hand.
Yes,
and sets
to
it on
start
fire.
That's
for
so
warmth.
Sad.
Aww. For warmth. And it was just like, when I saw it, I was just like, oh my god. This is, the Swamp Thing is so underrated.
Yes. I did not want to read any Swamp Thing, but so many people recommended Alan Moore's Swamp Thing.
Yes, and that's amazing.
After I read the first volume, I was just like hooked. It was so good. And when I saw that Tom King was writing this, I was like, oh my gosh, I have to read it. And it does not disappoint. If you can find a copy of the 80-page giant Swamp Thing Winter Special still at your comic shop, pick it up. It is $7.99, but it's freaking worth it. And as Jen said, there's two stories in here. So
and that was just the first one.
Yeah.
The second one, it's an original story by Len Wein, mm-hmm. who has passed away last year. And this was the last story that he basically scripted. So in honor of that, they left it without dialogue.
Yeah.
So they just, Kelly Jones, who is a very prominent artist during the 90s, and he still is a very popular artist, because he just has a way of drawing the muscle-bound heroes that a lot of people still like. And I can kind of see the appeal to it. He's very good with horror stuff, which is, I really like how he draws Swamp Thing. The way, like, he uses, like, shapes in, Kelly Jones. The way he draws Swamp Thing he draws it humanesque, but he also draws them kind of grotesquely.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he is an amalgamation of plants, and it's, he does a really good job with it. And for some reason Frankenstein appears in this, but I really like how he draws Frankenstein in it. But you can kind of see a narrative in this story. And then just like if Len Wein had been able to finish it, I'm pretty sure it would have been so amazing.
Yeah.
But just combined with Kelly Jones' art and what you can see, what you can make out of the story, it's very interesting because in it we see Swamp Thing and he grows something and gives it a piece of it to a bird so that it can build a nest. And we see him smile. I was just like, oh, that's so cute. And then in one of the pages we see Frankenstein and he's stealing a child.
Mm-hmm.
Who then we later see he's protecting it. And then, so we can make out story, but you know that he loves this child. And I was just like, oh, that's so cute. Like, what's going on? I wanna know! What's the deal? What happened? And then we see some powers of Swamp Thing that I'd never seen before, that he can just manifest himself from whatever plants are available.
Mm-hmm. I read that somewhere.
I think it was in the Alan Moore.
I don't know if it was that, but one of the only other Convergence titles that I really enjoyed was the Swamp Thing one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where I saw it.
Mm-hmm. And so, even though the plants are dead, and I think they're dead because the person that he talks to, he looks to be Abby's old ex.
Yes.
So I think that's Abby's old ex, and he seems to be like in a hospital or an asylum or something, or like a mental care facility. But the Swamp Thing appears from it, and I think that's why the plants are dead, is that he didn't want a reminder of the Swamp Thing, but the Swamp Thing still managed to manifest. And we just see that... And the story progresses, and we see Frankenstein again, but it's so interesting, this story without words.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
That we can still tell that something is happening, and I just find it funny because guess who makes an appearance in the Swamp Thing title?
That is exactly what I said when I turned the page. I'm like, of course, there's Batman.
Of course, it has to be.
Batman makes an appearance. He looks cool. I like his long back.
I wanted to know what he was saying. I mean, there's an outline at the end. Yeah,
there's an outline, which is what Len Wein was, what he wrote and stuff like that. But there was some dialogue. Okay. Oh, that wasn't Frankenstein. It was Solomon Grundy. Whoops.
Oh,
my mistake. Solomon Grundy, and I want to know more about Solomon Grundy now, because he seems interesting, and all I know about him is that he's a zombie.
Well, he sure has appeared a lot this week.
Yeah.
In books.
And so they do that story, and it's really good. I really like what Kelly Jones did with his artwork and everything. Even though I have my problems with him and how he's like, sometimes it's just like, okay, dude, tone it down. But then they post the actual script that was written for it. And there's some dialogue in it, so I would recommend reading it. because I'm like, if you want to maybe see more about the story, you can check, because none of the dialogue was really fleshed out. It was just more an idea of what he wanted to be on the panel.
And he never got to it.
But he never got to it. And then, DC, puts the, some little memorial shout outs that they posted on when Len Wein and Bernie Wrightson died in 2017, which are pretty good. We see a picture of Len Wein, and we see a full page artist that Bernie Wrightson did of the Swamp Thing beating up some dudes, which I really like Bernie Wrightson's art. Like, you want to talk about a master at horror? Like, he was it. He's so good. And
he's so tubular.
Yeah, he's tubular. It's just like, I'm just looking at this page right now, and everything from how Swamp Thing is drawn, like his teeth is just, it looks like a human skull, but he's still plant matter. The snakes, the trees, how he draws them. These like little demon things that have like faces on their chests. It's so visceral. I love it. Without being too gory. And it's just like, you know, that's so good. And imagining this colored, like knowing the colors that he used to use, that were used with his stuff.
Yeah.
It would have made.
I have a Bernie Wrightson signed Creepshow comic.
What?
Yes.
Nice.
That's so cool.
I'm a huge Stephen King fan, and one of the very first, San Diego Comic Cons that I went to, Eddie was like, you know, the artist, he didn't tell me names because at the time I had no idea. I wasn't into reading comics. I just was a Stephen King fan, and he knew. So he's like, I have this copy of Creepshow. I'm like, oh my gosh, it was so cool. Like, if you've seen the movie, that little kid is reading the comic book.
Yeah.
Actually, to cut you off right there, Creepshow was my very first comic book I ever owned.
Really?
No, continue.
So we brought the copy, and Eddie gifted it to me.
Aww.
And we went, and he was just sitting there like nothing, all by himself. And I walked right up to him. I was like, oh my God, I love this. And he signed it, and I have it somewhere. Eddie put it somewhere safe.
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely worth it. And just to let you know, Len Wein and Bernie Wrightson were the co-creators of Swamp Thing. They're the ones who created Swamp Thing and everything. And Len Wein himself, he's super prolific. He's a name that is recognizable in the industry because he helped create Wolverine. He helped create just so many characters. I think they have a list of him, but he was amazing. And so at the end, they have like a full like color page.
I loved this with Swamp Thing and Wolverine standing behind his desk.
Yeah, and and I believe he was at one point, editor-in-chief for both Marvel and DC. Not at the same time, of course, different time periods, but he was high up there on Marvel and DC and making decisions and everything. So he is super cool. And he, even after comics, he was doing stuff for TV, stuff for animation and stuff. He was just very prolific, and he passed away last year, yeah. So I think this was a really awesome tribute, and I'm so glad that they gave Tom King the story to do.
Yes.
Because it was so amazing. So, and it's a book that is, I think we don't have any more copies at Heidi Ho. I think we're out.
I don't know.
Because it was released.
It was last week. The winter special was last week, yeah.
The winter special. Was it last week?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, it was last week. Not on February.
No, this one was. Okay. Was
so Swamp Thing was actually last week, not this week. The book that came out this week.
I just happened to read it this week, that's why I got confused.
The book that came out this week that I absolutely adore is Young Monsters in Love. And this is, it's a bit pricey, it's $10, but it is $10, so very much worth it.
It's worth it.
It's worth it.
And we get to see Swamp Thing on the cover of this one as well.
Making out with the Bride of Frankenstein.
Yeah.
As Frankenstein watches in the background saying, "We were made for each other, but my bride betrayed me for Swamp Thing." Oh my God, it's so corny. I love it. And
there's like, how many stories are actually in here? There were a few.
10
stories. There's and I mean, some were better than others, but for the most part, I wasn't disappointed by any of them.
Yeah, same here. And so, kind of like going off of the Swamp Thing thing itself, but Kelly Jones did the cover art for this, and he actually does the art for the first story, which is a Man-Bat story. And so this book has 10 stories in it.
$1 each.
$1 each. And they're all really pretty good. And, they got Kyle Higgins writing one, Tim Seeley, who was the other one? Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing. Paul Dini wrote a story. Mark Russell, it was just, they like, Steve Orlando wrote Visibility, which is why we probably liked it a lot.
Which one was that one?
That was the one with Munster Malah.
Yes, I loved that one.
It was so good, but it was specifically released for Valentine's Day, but they all have like a touch of romance in it or about romantic feelings. And I really like the first one because it's a Man-Bat story, and I haven't read a Man-Bat story in like a good while. So, and it's just him struggling not to turn into Man-Bat even when he's confronted with the face, he's confronted with, his ex-wife. Yeah, his ex-wife now. She's basically like, you're too much. And
yeah.
She met someone new. And perfectly understandable when your husband turns into an insane bat dude, man bat dude, who goes around destroying things, you gotta call it quits. Like, I will not judge at all. Like, and it's just, it was a really good small short story. And I liked the second one, which was about Frankenstein and about his bride. And they're going into a facility to destroy robots that have been possessed by Satan.
Yeah, they're they are a special like ops team that goes in to protect the world from these crazed robots. I thought that was a fun little twist on the Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein
story.
Yeah.
And Bride of Frankenstein herself has 4 arms, which I didn't realize at first until I saw her holding 4 guns.
Oh yeah.
And I was just like, "Oh, that's kind of cool."
I don't think I realized it either the whole time. Until right now, I'm just looking at that picture.
And so, and it's pretty funny, and this whole story is written in the letter format. And
yes.
It's very cute, and it's very touching. Yeah. But at the end, there's a twist.
There is.
It's so good. I was just like, oh, damn. I mean, but like, yo, dude.
Not all love stories end happily.
Not all love stories end happily. And
are
this
you
one,
sure? is this a reminiscent to a Sweet November? No, just kidding. Spoiler alert, she dies.
Oh my god.
Sorry.
I mean, technically, she's already...
Sorry.
Technically, she's already dead. So nothing very much happens right here. But oh my god, the twist is so good. It's so good. I cannot recommend it enough. And then the third story is a Solomon Grundy story. And this is why I said in the Witcher special one, I was just like, damn, like, well, I need to know more about Solomon Grundy. Literally all I know is that he's like a zombie, a super powerful one who says his name a lot.
He's a Solomon Grundy born on Sunday, or was it Monday?
Yeah, you're okay, yeah, he has this repeating thing that he says. Yes. That never clicked with me. Cause all I knew about Solomon Grundy was what the animated series told me, and I just did not know anything else. But this makes me want to know more about him because it's a Solomon Grundy story, and Superman appears in it, along with Superboy, who I love, and he's so sweet. But, it's about Solomon Grundy, and he's at a cemetery, and he's talking with, well, not really talking with Superman, but they're there, and Superman is just there for him to kind of help him sort out some things, and it was very sweet.
Yeah.
And there's something that Superman says at the end that I thought was like very, very touching.
Yes.
And he says, "Love's always a risk, John, but it's worth it. Even when it hurts." And I was just all like,
yes.
Oh my god.
I took a picture of that particular panel and those lines, and I posted them on Valentine's Day. Or no, on the day before when I was reading it. Cause it was so poignant
poignant.
Like, yeah, that just, it's, Love is always a risk. You never know. You know, when you are maybe sharing feelings with somebody, you don't know if they're gonna return those feelings, or even if you're in a relationship, you don't know. You know, you have your ups and downs, and it's always a risk, but it's always worth it.
Always worth it. And it's
even if it hurts, he says.
Even if it hurts.
And actually, to be honest, I actually miss the heartache. The heartache was really brutal and excruciating, but it was kind of amazing to kind of live through that. And I haven't felt that way in a very long time. Knock on wood. Where's the wood? But yeah,
but it's really
crazy.
Good.
It's crazy.
And I really liked it because it had the sense of love perseveres even after death. And I was mm-hmm. just like, oh my God, goth. I love it. And speaking of that, the fourth story is actually a Raven story. And this was, I loved it. I love Raven so much. And when I grew up with the Teen Titans animated series show, not Teen Titans Go, the one before that. And Raven, I love Raven. She was my favorite. But in this story, it's Valentine's Day. Specifically, she says it's Valentine's
yeah.
Day. And she's been left alone at the tower. And she's just like, I'm fine with that. Someone needs to remember. And I was just like, oh, dang. And it's a very, I get, a lot of these are bittersweet now
yeah.
that I think about it. And it's just like, it's so good. Yeah, and in the Raven story, it again is very bittersweet. And it's just about, the way it ends, I was just like, oh my God, Raven mood. it was cute.
Yeah.
And I think it really showed how Raven is a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
Cause she's a teen titan, and most of the time, mostly like in artwork and stuff like that, and sometimes in the story itself, it doesn't really come across well that she's a teenager. And specifically that she's a moody, like emo teenager
yeah.
who is very isolated from the others, but she doesn't kind of want to be. She wants to have a connection with somebody, and it was very cute. I really liked it.
Yeah, I liked it too.
And cool. Then continuing with the other story is a Dead Man story.
Mm-hmm.
And this one was just cute. It was funny as well. And it just reminded me, like, Dead Man as a superhero is, like, I was just like, my guy, you're trying your best. You're awesome just for the little small things that he does. And it's just, Dead Man is, I like him. He's great. He's made it his way to one of my faves just because of the stories that they
yeah.
tell him. He's like, all my guy does is possess people.
Uh-huh.
He's
that's just, like, his possess- superpower.
That's just
he's dead.
And that's why he's called Dead Man.
Uh-huh.
So he can possess people, but that's about
yeah.
it. And yeah. that's how you can say that he's still a superhero from Dead Man, Dark Mansion of Forbidden Love. So right here, he does save this kid's life.
Yeah.
Sure, it's by possessing him and making him jump out of the way. But, but
I can do that. No, I'm just kidding. I can't do that.
I can't do that. But it's just, like, compared to other superheroes, like, Phantom Stranger has more powers. The Spirit has more powers. what's the other one? Just the regular Phantom or whatever his name is has more powers. Like, it's just like, he's somebody already got, like, all bases covered with others. So he just goes around doing, like, small things. But it's the small things that count. And it's very, very cute.
Yeah.
I really, really liked it. And you want to talk about elementary school. We're just talking about the
yes.
next place
yeah.
in elementary school.
And it's exactly what we're saying. The little kid is bullied, and mm-hmm. he gets mean Valentine's. Yeah.
Aww.
And it's just, and yeah, it was a little sad. Okay. If that's what happens, I can see why schools forbid other students from now doing the whole give everybody a Valentine's. But it was very cute just in itself for what Dead Man does to make brighten up this kid's day. And the little letter he writes at him
yes.
towards the end
uh-huh.
was super, super cute. Now on to the real tearjerker is, of course, the Swamp Thing story, because everything about Swamp Thing, I am now absolutely confirming, is freaking tragic. It's just a tragic story, and yeah. I freaking love him. I would be this lady. Like, she says something like, so Swamp Thing is out to get
and
a
And I like how Swamp Thing is like the most grotesquely just, he's not even a person, he's the anthropomorphic grass.
Yeah.
And he gets so much action in his book!
He does! He gets all the action! And it's just how they write him! He's so
yes,
sweet!
He is.
Just, even how she's in the... Even in the story, the person who is the object of his affections, she says, like, I've never done this with a man, much less a swamp thing, oh, but no. Oh my god, if you're like this with all the ladies. And I'm just so like, girl, mood? Like, shit. Like, if a single dude treated me the way Swamp Thing would treat me, I'd be like, goddamn. But Swamp Thing has got all the guys beat in all aspects. Yep. Like,
but he's not even a man.
He used to be.
He used to be.
He remembers. He remembers.
He remembers sometimes, but like, I'm just like, oh my god. I love Swamp Thing.
Yeah.
But the story starts off very cute.
Yeah.
It's very, very cute. Because Swamp Thing is, of course, known to the locals who help him out. Because one of them buys a Valentine's Day card that he wants to give to a botanist who has become his, I guess, girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And who he really, really likes and loves. And it's really funny because the first Valentine's Day card is super cheesy.
Yeah.
And says, like, and it has, like, a cheesy chicken on it and everything, too. And Swamp Thing, he's just like, no, not this
yeah.
one. Give me another one. And he's just like, okay, this one's fine. And he goes and the person, I don't believe we ever get a name. I don't think we do.
I wanted to fill the silence.
I'm sorry. And but she's a botanist, and he gets to know her, and I figure out something, like, because I haven't finished Alan Moore Swamp Thing, but Abby gets taken away for what? Like, I'm just like, what happened with Abby?
I don't remember either.
Like, again, I haven't finished.
Oh yeah, I only read the first volume, so I don't.
I'm like on volume 4 or 5. Oh, I'm like
way farther than me.
And so, but then there's still also the Swamp Thing New 52, so maybe it happened during then. But for some reason, Abby gets taken away, and I'm guessing she might not be alive anymore.
Yeah, when he referenced that, I was like, oh, first of all, spoiler alert. Mm-hmm. But second of all, I was like, oh man, that's so sad.
That's so sad. She got taken away from him. And from the way he says it, it's been years. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, so he, like, you know, somebody comes along, he's alone, he's lonely.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I'm gonna cry for Swamp Thing. And again,
oh, that is so cute.
It's super cute.
There's a panel of Swamp Thing and this woman holding hands. Her hands are so tiny, his hands are so big that she's just holding his pinky.
Yeah, and it's so cute, but then again, somebody has to come along and ruin it.
Ruin it.
And that's all I'm gonna say. It was so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And so, but it's so bittersweet. And the artwork for this.
The art is awesome.
Is so good. It, like, I was telling, the girls earlier, it very much strongly reminds me of Dave McKeon art, which is, it's a compliment on itself.
Yeah, I think it's closer to the, Arkham Asylum.
Yeah.
Dave McKeon art, where he actually drew all the panels inside the story, not only the cover art.
Mm-hmm.
So it's reminiscent to that. I guess it looks a bit like a dark watercolor.
It kind of reminds me too of a Weird World, like, aesthetic.
Yeah, aesthetic, kind of watercolor-esque.
Yeah.
Kind of a bit of mixed media in it. It's very good. And I love the name of the short story itself.
Yes.
It's called Swamp Thing in Heart-Shaped Box. Cause there's a reason that he says It's called like this because there's a small monologue in there mm-hmm. where he talks about his heart and how, mm-hmm. and when he gave his Valentine, she's like, you know, human hearts aren't shaped like this. He's just like, I know. And then she's just like, how would your heart be shaped? And he's just like a box.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh my God! It was so cute! If y'all can't tell, I really like this. But, the next story is actually about two villains. I'm guessing they're usually villains that I have never heard of, but now I'm invested.
Yeah.
Literally, I want to go read Frankenstein, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., even though there was like two or three volumes ever released of that. Because I'm getting the feeling that's where they came out. But it was so good. And it was so cute too. This was the one that was written by Steve Orlando, who is a gay man himself. Mm-hmm. And I love all the works that he's done. He's actually writing JLA Doom Patrol.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
well, the JLA...
For Young Animal?
For Young Animals with Gerard Way. Uh-huh. So he's kind of spearheading that along with everybody else. Like the Mother Panic, the mm-hmm, Batman, mm-hmm. Chaney Girl and Wonder Woman, the one that just came out this week. But in this story, it's Munzir Malah and the Brain in Invisibility. And, oh my God, this one was so good. Okay, this is-
if you would have asked me to guess for a million years that this is the way that this story was gonna go, I would have never guessed it.
Yeah, and this one actually ends very happy.
Yes, this one's happy.
This is when the things start to turn, and most of these after that are actually very happy.
Yeah.
So we get over our bittersweet, heart-wrenching ones, and we start getting into, like, the more fun, like, well, not fun, but, like, at least, like hopeful ones.
Yeah,
as
more
well.
Lighthearted.
More lighthearted. And Munzir Malah.
As lighthearted as a story about a gorilla with guns and a brain in a robot can be.
But it's very sweet.
Yeah,
it
is.
It's so sweet. And I thought it was gonna go in a different direction. Mm-hmm. But then once he started telling his story and about how Munzir Malah came about to be who he is, as Kristen said, an ape. He's a gorilla. And the Brain was a person. He was specifically a scientist who mm-hmm. actually made Munzir Malah. And Munzir Malah starts talking about how he came about to be, who the Brain was. I was just like, aww, they're so... I mean, they're villains, but also, aww, they're so cute.
And we see the police officer, or the person who's coming in here and ends up helping out, is
she has my reaction. Yeah.
But isn't she the girl? Wasn't she Kate Kane's girlfriend or something at some point?
Oh, I think she is.
Yeah.
Not because I don't think Renee Montoya is back, or is she? Is she back in?
I don't know.
Well, this is I don't know when this takes place.
Yeah,
they're just one shots. But I think this is actually Batwoman's girlfriend.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. At least it looks like her now that you pointed
out.
Well,
she says her name in here somewhere.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, oh, this name sounds familiar.
Maggie Sawyer.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So it is Kate Kane's girlfriend. Actually, so that's what she understands.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So it's super cute, and the twist is so good, and it doesn't end how you would think it would, but it's so sweet, and it's so hopeful, and it's very, very nice.
And this book came out on Valentine's Day, but definitely, if you come across it and are able to read it, these stories are good no matter what time of year you're reading them.
Mm, and they're all super, super great. And I'm gonna end on that little recap because there's still like five more that we need to go through.
But those were some of the best ones.
Those were some of the best ones. But they were all really, really good. Of them all, the Swamp Thing one was probably the best one. But they were all great. And I highly, highly recommend this book. It's well worth your money. And I wish, oh my God, do I wish that this becomes a monthly series. But I don't think it is, even though they marked it as number one. But if they... DC, if you would make it, I would literally sell my soul. Young Monsters in Love. It's like, it's such a color, it's like a tribute to all of their older mm-hmm. stuff, like, Secret House of, like, Sinister Love, The House of Secrets line, just all those old gothic romance tales that they used to have that they no longer make.
And it's the very basic idea that even monsters need love too.
Yes. You have me sold already.
So do they have a vampire story in there?
They do.
Yes. I Vampire,
which also had very nice artwork. Mm-hmm. But there's actually, I think, another vampire story as well. There's two vampire stories in here.
I don't remember.
But it's highly, yeah, highly recommend it.
Nice. Exciting.
Oh yeah, and this is more, okay. Last
Jen had three on my radar. I forgot about that one, actually.
I did too. And this was actually a story that I read back in high school, middle school.
What?
It's been a long time. And I actually read it originally online because there was no available.
Oh wow.
Yeah, this wasn't available in print. So I had to be like, oh god, like the old days with the internet. It's not even that old.
The old days with the internet.
Because you don't understand, you can't read Scandalations online anymore. They've cracked down on that.
Oh, really?
So, on the internet, things go by fast. So, what I'm talking about is actually, like, super old when you think about it. Mm-hmm. Like, on internet terms. It's just, like, you can't read Scandalations anymore. And so, a lot of original stuff that doesn't get translated is no longer available because all these old websites that, well, of course, they were like sealing and, you know, copyright laws and everything, all about that stuff. They were translating works that other companies weren't translating. Mm-hmm. So, the book that I have here is called Dorohedoro, and it was...
What's it called again?
Dorohedoro.
I just wanted you to say it again.
And it's a pretty grisly kind of... It's pretty macabre. And but the basic premise is that the world is divided in between magicians and non-magical people, and these magical people are always being experimented on by these wizards, and so that's why many of them end up kind of grotesquely shaped or with different animal parts. And these people hate wizards, and whenever they can, if they can kill one, they will. And wow. So it's very gory, but it's also kind of cheerful because the main character himself, he has an alligator head, and he's out to, like, I'm going to kill wizards, and, like, I'm going to get the bastard who turned me into this. But he is being taken care of, and he takes care of a woman who's a wizard. And she's a very powerful one. But she makes great gyoza, so he's just like, yeah, so he's just all like, he's just like, I like you, you're cool. And so it's a very, and he's funny, too, so it's a very... It's very gory, but it's very cheery, and that's how I described it to Kristen. So it was just nice getting to read something that I knew that I could only read, like, online as a kid. And seeing it in print format, I'm so glad that it's in print format, because when I had been reading it, it wasn't available. And now it is, and I'm so happy that it's out. But if you're a fan of like Attack on Titan or like The Walking Dead or just like any of like kind of like grisly stuff like that, but with a good story and with the like heart to it, I highly recommend this one. It's really, really good. And there's like, considering how everything is, there's only 22 volumes out, so.
Oh, I was just gonna ask, I say there's volume one. This is volume one. So it goes up to 22 so far?
So far, yeah. It's been going on for maybe 10 years now.
Wow. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's a long, with most manga, it's a very long running story. But the fact that there's only 22 volumes available, unlike Naruto, where there's like freaking 75 volumes. And I'm like, nah, that's one that I started in middle school. Yeah. And then at one point I went on a break, and then during that break, like, 20 volumes were released, and then I had to catch up. I was just like, god damn. But this is really, really good, and I really like the artwork and the story, and so I was just very happy to know that there was a volume one out, and that it's been out for a while, and so I just highly recommend it.
Cool. Excellent. Well, that was Jen with On My Radar.
All of her On My Radar.
All of her, it's all over her radar.
All over her radar. All up in there.
And now we have Juntos y Fuertes. And to introduce the segment is Kristen.
Okay, so Juntos y Fuertes is the segment of Comadres y Comics where we really like to highlight comic creators who are part of other marginalized groups and communities. And today, I think both Sarah and I have Juntos y Fuertes. And I'm going to start with Bingo Love, which is also a book that came out on Valentine's Day. And when I read the premise of this book, I was like, oh my gosh, this sounds so freaking cute. The little description on the back says, take a trip through time with Hazel Johnson and Mary McRae as they fall in love at church bingo in 1963, break up because of pressure from their families, and then reunite nearly 50 years later. And what the back of it says, doesn't say, is that 50 years later, both of these women are married and have been living lives with husbands and families and stuff. And then when they meet again, they are faced with all of this flood of emotion that comes back from they were each other's first love. It was so freaking good. It was so cute. The art is so cute. The creators... the actual book is written by T. Franklin and art by Jen, I don't know how to pronounce that last name, Saint-Ange?
She knows how to do it.
Jen knows how to do it. Yeah, I think that it's Jen
Saint-Ange. I remember that Jen said it before, I'm like, Jen knows how to do it.
The artwork is so awesome and amazing. Something that I just really appreciated and loved was just the different, not only different shades of people in this book, a lot of black families as characters here in this book, and their extended family members and stuff, the different shades of black people in this book, the different body sizes of people in this book. There was just so much positivity in all, areas, and just, the story was so sweet. And it's definitely a love story, and it's a love story that follows these women over 50 years of time, and so you're following them into the future. And the way that it ends is so, oh my gosh. Like, I was, little tears came out of my my sad little eyes. It was so, so cute. And this is actually, this project was kickstarted. I'm not sure when, how far back it was, but the book itself now has been picked up by Image and is in local comic book shops. So for a Kickstarter project to actually be picked up by Image, the biggest indie comic book publishing company there is, I think is amazing. So I think that why I picked it for Juntos y Fuertes is definitely they are not only the creators are black women, but also comic creators who very grassroots indie creators who had a project that people believed in and backed, and it caught the attention of Image. So definitely Bingo Love. It's already sold out at Diamond. You cannot get it at Diamond. We have a couple of copies at Heidi Ho Comics still, but it's it actually sold out before release date. So really? Pre-sold out from Diamond, and they are a second printing is already in the works. I believe it's going to come out in March.
No, that was the second printing.
This was the second printing?
This was the second
printing. No way.
It had already come out.
From Diamond, though?
Yeah, from Diamond.
Oh, really?
So that is actually a second printing. Oh. They've announced the third printing.
Oh,
and okay. So, because we didn't get it in the first time around. Uh-huh. I special ordered it because we didn't get any.
Right.
Oh, and, okay. And let me make sure. But yeah, and also it came out with the Valkyries. They were saying, hey, is this still available? And they're like, no, the second printing comes out this Tuesday.
Gotcha. Okay.
And it's about T. Franklin. She's a very prominent voice on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
I believe her username is Ms. T. Franklin,
mm-hmm.
M-I-Z, and she is, I believe, a disabled queer black woman.
Yes, yes, that was the other thing.
She's
yes.
a disabled queer black woman, and she is unafraid and unrepentant in calling out all their common creators on their bullshit. That
yeah,
they pull. She has a strong voice,
mm-hmm.
and she is unafraid of being heard. And she is just, she's so amazing. She's such an inspiration. And and I'm so glad that she got picked up by Image, because I know she has written other stuff as well.
Yes,
but it's just. To see her being taken seriously as a creator is so awesome, because I've been following her on Twitter for a long time. So when I found out that she was doing that, Bingo Love was actually available on Diamond, I was just like, oh, time to order.
Yeah.
it's so good, and I'm gonna be excited to read that, because it looks so good.
It's so cute,
and I have full confidence in T that she has written an amazing story.
You can find out more information about the book at bingolove.com. I'm sorry, bingolovecomic.com. And the book is rated teen, and it's I guess book category on the back is LGBT romance. Mm-hmm. So, I highly recommend this book, and, I loved it. So mm-hmm. that's my Juntos y Fuertes.
Excellent. I really like that. I really like the art. The cover art is really cool. It really brings out what the story is going to entail inside. I'm not going to ask whether it's a happy or a sad ending. I won't be surprised. But okay. If you're crying, it could be either.
It could be either.
It could be tears of joy or yep. tears of pain.
Oh, my God. I can't wait. This is Sarah, and I also have a Juntos y Fuertes. My Juntos y Fuertes is a Harriet Tubman Demon Slayer. Now, this was a Kickstarter project that started back in 2016. It actually started November 28th, 2016, and it was backed by 603 backers, and it raised $21,000, and their goal was
$15,000. Wow.
I got this first issue on Comixology, which it was available there for $2.99. The creator is David Crownson, and the artist is Cortland Ellis. And basically, this is... I'm going to be several issues. I only got issue number one. And there is also a book available on Comixology. It's already been a year, and it started out back in November, because they wanted to release it for February 2017 for Black History Month. So it's been over a year that it's been out. It's a graphic novel blending supernatural action with the true life of Harriet Tubman, which that was like amazing already in itself. I actually read the very first issue, and it is just super awesome. It actually opens up in 1860 Charleston, South Carolina, and already the artwork is really cool. It's really dark, and of course you have this family that is trying to escape slavery, and it's kind of cool because it has some humor to it with the banter of the young... there's a young girl, the young daughter and her dad. I thought their relationship was really cute. And then you get this really, realistic kind of, dialogue.
Hmm.
They don't really pull any punches. Mm-hmm. It's really in your face. The N word is just tossed around like insanely. It's kind of, reminiscent to the Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. So this is something that I found to be very exciting. So I can't wait to read the rest of the story, but, he was able to release it, and it was picked up by Comixology, but they don't have any, not like, Image or what publisher. They don't have like a large publisher backing. And I'm not even sure if you can find it, in actual book format.
Print format. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Print format, yes. So far I'm really loving it. So if, in homage to Black History Month and it being February, this is something that I recommend. that brings us to the end of episode number 28. Are there any shout outs or anything, girls?
Well, I would like to remind everybody that we are having our Javier Hernandez 20th anniversary El Muerto, event at Heidi Ho Comics on February 24th from 5 to 8. There's gonna be food, there's gonna be music and dancing. There's gonna be a cool, Dia de los Muertos altar. There's going to be Javier Hernandez there signing. He has some exclusives that he's going to be offering. And in addition, there's going to be a cool pop-up art show that Javier is going to have with a lot of different artwork of his over the years. So February 24th from 5 to 8 at Heidi Ho Comics at 1431 Lincoln Boulevard in Santa Monica. Please show up. It's sponsored by Comadre C Comics, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to be amazing. There's going to be a photo booth. There's going to be, like paper stuff for the kids. It's fun for all family members. So bring everybody. Trae a la comadre, a la tía, a la prima, a la,
la vecina,
a la vecina, a la tutu, a la chochi, a la chichi.
A la sancha. No digas a la familia, pero ahí tráela.
Just come on down. You know we come in big numbers. So yeah. We can't wait to see you guys. We can't wait to meet you. It's going to be fun for the whole family. So come on down. And I believe he's has some other exclusive prints for this event. So don't miss out. If you remember, we reviewed the book last episode, and it was amazing.
Mm-hmm. It was great. And then this Saturday, February 17th, we are going to be at Long Beach Comic Con on the panel.
Long Beach Comic Expo.
Long Beach
it's
Comic Expo.
It's easy to get them confused. I do it all the time.
Sorry. And we'll be there for a panel along with Fanbase Press, who are actually the ones hosting it. And if you can, catch us there. We're panel's going to be from 1 to 3 o'clock, I believe.
Yes, I believe so. Mm-hmm. And the title is... what is the title of the actual...
The Impact of Latinx Creators and Readers in the Comic Book Industry.
There you go.
So it's right up our alley, guys. Yep. So come on down, have questions for us, throw some potato... Tomatoes. Tomatoes, because potatoes hurt.
Potatoes would hurt. I've actually been hit in the head by a frozen tomato.
Oh my God.
Yeah, somebody bring the salad, just toss it at us.
I know, right?
I know. See, Kristen goes dirty. She goes dirty on this. I did say toss it. I know, I did say toss a salad.
Toss the salad.
At us. So.
Hey, I'm not opposing.
So, yeah, please come on down. I would love to meet you guys. So, hopefully, you know, and show the support for our Latin based community projects and such. So hopefully we can see you there. Those are the only events we are having so far. But you can reach us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter,
Snapchat.
Did I say Instagram? I did.
And comadrecomics@gmail.com.
Thank you. We have been your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.